Behold the man. Pilate said to them, Behold the man. John 19, verse 5. When Pontius Pilate, in his embarrassment, exhibited the Savior in public and appealed to the compassion of the people so that yet another year would be granted to the life of Jesus the Nazarene, he actually said something, without wanting to or realizing it, that would give the next generation something to think about. He displayed Jesus in all the misery that had come about him. Jesus was scourged and shown in the form of a caricature king. And then the judge, who had no courage to speak his judgment, spoke, Behold the man. He was intimating that since this man had been beaten so much and thus substantially degraded in public, one may as well consider him dead and forget about the history of his life. For after all this, he would not have anything more to contribute to public life. Nobody needs to be afraid of him any longer. Not a single temple needs to feel threatened because of him. Thus far, he has been a strange individual. I, Pilate, admit that. He has done many remarkable things and spoken words that are partly very interesting and definitely very specific and curious. He is a very extraordinary person and self-confident too. And I know that you are afraid of that. He is such a strange, such an unpredictable individual. You can indeed expect a surprising thing to happen every day if he is free to wander about. I certainly acknowledge that. But just for now, let him go. Behold the man. Behold the misery. After this day, he will not be able to perform anything anymore in which to show his singularities, his individuality, his personal inclinations. Let him go. From now on, he will be a non-person, a non-individual. He will no longer be able to stamp public life by surprising experiments. For when we let him go, he will no longer find any connections for his singularities. Thus Pilate did not say, Is this man beholding you? But, Behold the man. Just as Caiaphas unconsciously mentioned things which sounded like divine mysteries, so did Pilate. He requested space in the world for Jesus the Nazarene, on condition that he would lose all individuality, all singularities, all personal contact with the people. He should no longer have any natural connections anywhere. And at that moment Pilate asked what God had commanded. For Christ was indeed no human person. Indeed, he was a person, but his person was being the Son of God. That is, he was not a human person. He was not just an individual. He did not have something individual. And he had no character either. He had no character traits and no natural inclinations, as a result of which he would be drawn automatically to those of the same nature by individual inclinations. He is indeed, in regards to people, impersonal, no individual. As far as Pilate was concerned, he was allowed to live, as long as he did nothing according to his own nature. But as far as God was concerned, he was only allowed to live up to this moment on the earth as the one who did nothing according to his own nature. For in him nothing was according to his own nature. He did not have an own nature. He had true and genuine human nature and human impersonality. Just as with Caiaphas, little did Pilate know the mystery for which his words could have been the vehicle. What Pilate said here is, as he intended it, the greatest heresy. He implied, let him from now on be impersonal. God said, you do not know what you are saying. For the non-personal man, that is a miracle that you, Pilate, cannot conceive. For no eye has seen that, no ear has heard it, and no heart has considered it. Pilate said, he should lose his individuality. He indeed had it, but my soldier scorched the singularities he possessed out of him. God said, he has no individuality, nor ever had any. Pilate said, he should be considered non-personal, for he has become less than personal. He has sunk below the level of the individual maintaining of himself. God said, he had to be impersonal in regards to people, for he is above all personalities, because he carries all individuals as the person of God's Son by the word of his strength. Pilate meant that he would from then on be residing among the people as impersonal, and as a result would not be able to touch anybody. Everyone would pass by him without having personal contact with him. God said, this one wants to reside impersonally as human among you, and as a result will touch everyone, and no one will be able to pass him by without contact with him as office bearer. For he has said, I am God's Son, and I did not take upon myself a human personality, but the true human nature. And as a result, I am connected to every human individual in the official relationship as servant of the Lord, as the one who maintains God as God in the world. And to all who believe in me, I am the official prophet, priest, and king. And by the work of my office, I will be fall and resurrection. Thus I do not touch anyone, no matter the rank or position, in personal contact, but as office bearer. That is why the behold the man has meaning for us also, as long as we understand it in the way God intended and expressed it. For Pilate did not say, behold that man, that particular individual, and neither did God say, behold that man. Christ is not this or that, but he is the Son of God and also the Son of Man, Lord and Head, and he carries everyone, of whatever possible miraculous individuality he may be, by his power, in his office as Messiah. Let us also consider this every time we are standing before the celebration of the Holy Supper. It is not someone who calls us there. Neither do we find there a natural connection. It is concrete and absolute, without natural contact, without the connection of our person to the human person of Jesus. For that person does not exist. Only faith connects us in the supper to him. And that faith does not connect itself to Jesus in a natural way, as we connect to men of equal inclination or character, but accepts him as he accepted us in his messianic office, as given ones, by the Father, whom he knew and appointed as new creatures, and who, moreover, wants to impart into us everything that the office still continually wants to impart in us, to strengthen the new life that was wrought in his own, to reinforce it not in a natural, but in a mystical union. Thus, we do not want to go to the table of the covenant by natural, but by spiritual love. We have to deal there with him who can and wants to meet us, not in the narrow passage of two souls forged together, but on the plain fields of the official messianic administration, which in everyone's individual inclination, everyone's distinct curiosity, finds connection not in equality of character, nor in the inclination of position, but by the official service of the servant of the Lord, who in his broad human nature always understands us as little people of distinct features. He carries us also in this by the word of his power, of him who is not a teacher to us as Socrates, who indeed had to have a certain natural equality with his students in order to pass something on to them. He remains the Christ of God, and for that reason created and maintained the given ones of the Father to him in such a way that they, from his messianic fullness, can as a new creation receive grace for grace. Behold the man.